Hey everyone, I'm Swati Rawat and welcome to the Visionary Podcast, where I talk to visionary Indian women with inspiring, intriguing and aspirational stories. In episode 39, our visionary is Pompi Sridhar. Pompi is the director at Manyata for Mothers, an initiative which aims to standardize maternal quality care in private sector facilities across India. India has one of the highest numbers of maternal deaths globally, and Manyata for Mothers is aiming to change this by ensuring that women receive quality care throughout their pregnancy and childbirth. Tune in as Pompi talks about the impact of this initiative and how it is reducing maternal mortality across the country.
Hi Smati. So I was working with the health industry all the while, having graduated as an occupational therapist specialized in orthopedics and neurology. And the idea really was to kind of attend to children with special needs. That was really what I dreamt of. I grew up with my principal's daughter in Delhi Public School, New Delhi, who was a spastic in those days. Our principal, Shyama Chona, used to take her to the US for treatment. And there was no treatment for such children in India. And so I kind of dreamt of setting up services to cater to the needs of such special children. And that's how I really got into health care and, ensure that I get into the correct, line, which was occupational therapy, which took care of such children. And then, I did my master's also. So that, I had the required knowledge and I wanted to go out over to the US to learn more. But unfortunately, I figured out that my entire batch had gone to the US and there was no one remaining in India. And that's where I felt that, the challenges were many. So it wasn't just having the skills to treat children, but also just the entire public health system was lacking in country. And then later on, I did a management, an MBA to kind of try and understand the corporate world, because I felt that there was a business solution required to attend to these needs. I found that the critical thing that was missing from all healthcare initiatives in country was the affordability issue and the solutions to address the affordability issue was the missing piece. And therefore I felt that required some innovative solutions around ensuring, one, best of healthcare is available, and second, that people are able to afford it. So that's how I really got started with a health and management sort of a career. I was very fortunate enough to have got an opportunity to work with Apollo Group, with Dr. Pratap Reddy himself in the beginning, because in those days, there wasn't any private healthcare insurance per se. It was the servicing of the, public sector insurance through, Apollo's, arm. And that's how I started to learn about healthcare management and about what goes into delivering good care at affordable prices, about case management, etc., and really learned some of those international concepts as well, which were very foreign, so to say, to our country at that point in time, which was like the beginning of 2000. And then I got an offer from ICICI Lombard to join them and to start, the country's first private sector healthcare insurance. And I did that for almost a decade, when not just, the corporate healthcare insurance, but also insurance targeted towards the needy, which is now called micro health insurance. Worked with the regulator on regulations for that, got trained across the globe in several countries. And then, what we really needed to do is design products that were developed in the context of Indian data, Indian people, and that would cater to the needs, to the way our hospitals work, etc. Okay. And after doing after a decade of doing that, also, I wasn't really satisfied because what I realized is like the insurance products were pushing people into the hospitals. Mm. And what we required is to keep people outside hospitals. That is healthy.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And so I felt that we needed to focus on primary healthcare. Hmm. And so while at ICICI, I applied for a grant to the ILO, the International Labour Organization, saying that I want to develop some primary healthcare products. And I got that grant while it was for ICICI. And, you know, it was sort of some development role, a little different from the commercial role that I was doing, running insurance products and an insurance vertical. However, I had a lot of support from the senior most management at ICICI because that was really the need of the country and from all other insurance companies as well. Mm. And so we went on, I moved to ICICI Foundation, heading all programs where I had access to finance, healthcare, education, all of that under, you know, the various programs that we were doing. So I could mix and match, so develop a healthcare program, how it is financed, etc., but focused on development of this primary healthcare. And then, you know, some of these innovations were recognized, but I still had the tag of being, you know, representing ICICI, which was a commercial organization. And therefore, you know, I decided to move out of ICICI, work directly with the World Bank and GIZ, which is a German technical cooperation, to help the government very directly with the National Health Insurance Program and also with Aadhaar. So where I felt that I could combine my, you know, the healthcare management skills. And in those days, tech was really starting to transform the way mass markets are addressed or how you can reach the population. And so I required to understand and work on technology. And that was the critical piece that I started to work on together with the government, which was, again, you know, which is how India has actually leapfrogged in terms of most of the social schemes.
Yeah. So, Pompey, let's talk about the present. And I want to understand from you about what Manyata initiative is. So could you tell me what is this initiative? What is its mission? And when did it begin?
So, you know, one of the most important benchmarks of measuring development, so to say, of a nation is how equitable care is, right? So how equitable care is and, you know, how can therefore people participate of the in the economic growth and prosperity of the nation. But what has happened in India is while we have progressed, you know, our GDP has been going, I mean, it's one of the highest in the world and it's been going up, but somewhere health was left behind. And maternal health and women's health is one of the core indicators that will show in which direction the nation is headed as far as healthcare outcome goes. And we lagged behind in most of the indicators as far as women or maternal health is concerned. I'm saying.
And Pompey, what were these indicators?
So this is family planning, which is access to family planning, as well as maternal health.
Okay.
And of course, there are several other related, you know, indicators, which are violence against women and, you know, sexual reproductive health, etc. But in layman's language, it's really about women and girls, so to say, and how are girls impacted? How soon are they impacted in their lifestyle by public health measures that will help them, you know, not only grow, but thrive and, you know, survive and thrive, as we say.
Yeah,
and that's where, you know, there was something called Millennium Development Goals, which the country was trying to achieve by 2000, but we missed the target. And so we came up with the Sustainable Development Goals. And that also, you know, we saw that most of the women related, that is SDG, Sustainable Development Goal number 3. And that's where, you know, I mean, India was attempting several initiatives to address these, but we were still not meet some of these goals. And that's where I figured out that, you know, Merck for through their program, Merck for Mothers, would actually designed a program to meet these, to help India meet these sustainable healthcare goals for mothers and for women.
Mm-hmm.
And so that really was, you know, to me, you know, a very, I would say a very good lever to be able to achieve India's vision of helping women achieve a more fruitful and a fulfilling life.
So Pompey, could you tell me, when did this actually begin, the Manyata initiative, and what was its mission at that time, and what is it doing now?
So the Manyata initiative really started almost 10 years ago. We'll be celebrating 10 years anniversary later this year, okay. In which, we looked at the recommendations from the World Health Organizations and from premier public health schools like the Harvard Public Health Schools around what are those interventions that will help better outcomes for mothers in terms of, you know, when they're delivering or in the prenatal and the postnatal scenarios. And we figured out that, you know, there were several initiatives in place to help women deliver at institutions. So there were cash incentives. If you deliver at an institution, you'll get some cash. And that kind of moved the needle on the home deliveries to institutional deliveries. So earlier, about 40% women were delivering at home. That became 20% very easily by just doing this particular program called Conditional Cash Transfers, Janani Suraksha Yojana. However, when women were pushed into these hospitals for delivery, some of these hospitals were not of good quality. And so women going there actually landed up with poorer outcomes than what they would have probably had at home, which meant that the quality of care at private hospitals or at public hospitals needed to be standardized. And that's where WHO came up with something called clinical guidelines.
Okay.
So which is, besides hospital standards, there are some clinical guidelines that are required to be followed by the team that is delivering babies. And so we picked up these clinical guidelines, gave it to the professional society here in India, which is FOCSI, and asked them to modify them to the Indian context, exactly like what I had done in my insurance field. And so, you know, took the guidelines, international guidelines, translated to the Indian context, and then developed a quality improvement program around it with help of John Hopkins NGO, which is Japaigo in India. They are, again, one of the global best organizations when it comes to skilling and training. So all of this is around behavior change in performing a healthcare task.
Yeah,
and that's certainly not easy. And that's what happens all around the world. People get used to a certain way of delivering healthcare, and then a lot of myths around it. And therefore, when WHO comes up with a lot of these guidelines, I mean, the adaptation in country is always a challenge.
Yeah,
and so we set out to do this program where we said Manyata will be an accreditation, which is quality improvement, and then a formal accreditation by FOCSI, so that, you know, the hospitals can therefore be recognized by people as quality centers.
Yeah,
and that's how it started with a formal accreditation process in 2017, and now we have about 1,500 hospitals.
Yeah, I mean, that sounds absolutely great, Pompey. But while you were saying that, I had this question, like, with such a diverse population and in such a diverse country like India, when you really have to standardize something and, you know, push that out as one of the frameworks on how, say, maternal care should be conducted, what were some of the roadblocks that you were facing or that you had faced and overcome during this journey?
So one of the roadblocks, the biggest roadblock, is the recognition of the private sector by the government themselves. So mind you, the private sector does not get subsidies from the government very directly. They are left to themselves to fund for themselves. And there's a lot of mistrust that the private sector is always out there to profiteer, etc. And so when there is no trust, it becomes that much more difficult to get started. Nonetheless, that's where 50% of the women were delivering. So we needed to work with the private sector. And so gradually we started to make inroads, started to work with WHO and the ministry and the private sector, FOCSI, to make the case for self-regulation. Can private sector step up and say, we are self-regulating and we are going to do the certification program and accreditation program so that everyone has a comfort of the quality of service that we are providing. And mm-hmm. in that way, I think we were able to really, you know, make some headway in terms of some public-private partnerships. But besides trust, I think the issue with the private sector is it's kind of a chicken and egg. If they don't have enough patients, they don't have enough business, they're not able to invest in it. And then, you know, they cannot provide good care. And it's always also very much related to the economy, and the pandemic has also left a lot of these private sector providers in a lurch where they don't have enough business to sustain and they have closed down.
And Pompey, if you could just put numbers on these figures and just help me understand. So when Manyata started, from that time till now, how many professionals has it trained? How many hospitals has it been implemented at? I just want to understand the impact of what has happened so far.
So far, about 1,500 hospitals have enrolled for Manyata, out of which about 1,200 hospitals have already got certified for Manyata. This is under various schemes that we have floated, whether it is directly with this NGO that I talked about, or the financial route, which is the development impact bond, which we have done in Rajasthan. And then right now we are trying to help some entrepreneurs, the doctors who were running training and skilling institutions in country to take on Manyata so that this can be a sustainable program. Okay. And by doing so, our hope is that, you know, right now we are at 1,500 and there may be about 35,000 facilities in India that provide maternal care in the private sector.
Yeah.
And we would really like to reach out to at least 80% of these 35,000 hospitals so that, you know, every single woman receives at least the basic quality care that WHO is recommending.
And Poppy, when you mentioned these 35,000 hospitals, do they have any particular commonality in all of them that say all these hospitals belong in tier 2, tier 3 cities of India, or there are some in that are there in the metro cities as well, or these are the hospitals that are present at the, you know, far out rural districts of India, and therefore we need to standardize and give this structure to them?
So these hospitals comprise of tier 1, tier 2, tier 3 cities, the entire private sector. But unfortunately in our country, you know, the 75% of the population that accesses maternal health care is residing in these crowded cities, the tier 1 cities. And that's where these healthcare facilities are concentrated. 75% of these hospitals are in these crowded metros. However, you know, there is this remaining 25-30% of the country which is rural and which is the tier 2, tier 3, which is where, you know, there is not enough of these facilities. And also, in maternal care, there is something called a golden hour rule, which means that if a mother gets into complication, you need to be able to transport a woman within an hour to a facility that is able to provide her the required care. But you can imagine with a vast country like India, I mean, if you do not even have an ambulance service to take her to the nearest hospital very often. And so that is the reason that, you know, we are looking at how can women be moved towards the right level of care in appropriate, you know, way, whether it's an ambulance or whether she can, you know, reach there before delivery so that she's able to access the healthcare facility in time, or bring the facilities to the women. So if there are more women residing in these urban, you know, locations, can we have more facilities which can cater to these women so that there is no overcrowding? And it is at times, you know, we have seen that even in places like North Bangalore, there will be a government hospital which is like overcrowded. There are two women on one bed, and there may be a neighboring government hospital where there is no one there going there because the quality is so poor. Or they don't have the basic infrastructure to take care of, you know, 90% of the deliveries. And so out of all the infrastructure that we have in the country, which is about 4,000 public hospitals and these 35,000 small and big private sector hospitals, we are catering to about 30 million plus deliveries in a year.
Wow.
Which is the second highest number of deliveries worldwide.
Yeah. Pompey, I mean, speaking about that, could you share a story of or two on, you know, what the impact of this initiative has been on the lives of these women?
Yeah, that's a good question. So I've been, Jharkhand has been on my mind because that is a state which has got very, you know, low human development index. So the basic parameters show that, you know, it is far behind some of the other progressive states. And because of that, that's a state that's kind of adopting digital technology or anything, any lever that can possibly help any of anything, whether it is healthcare or education, etc., in a very rapid pace. And so we started programming in Jharkhand way back in 2017. And there, even the private sector is present only in 4 districts out of 17. So you can imagine there are so many women in the hinterland who do not even have access to proper healthcare. And that's where our program has been able to make a significant impact. There are good 60 to 70 hospitals in aspirational districts, very hard to reach areas where private sector hospital is the only hospital. And they are providing these the very comprehensive care where the teams are able to recognize the complications when they occur, as well as refer women on time, sometimes even before the delivery, to higher level of care. And in that way, they have been able to save, you know, several lives. And in fact, there was one woman who, one particular, you know, set a team in a very rural hospital who was able to step up and save several women during the pandemic last year itself.
Wow.
When the entire private sector was asked to kind of shut down because they wanted to stop elective surgeries and they wanted to kind of just focus on the government public system. And that's where I think this hospital, you know, started to kind of just their team was working around the clock. And there are a lot of cases that we've heard where in the middle of the night, women have gone to complications and without the doctors also out there around in the hospital, the nurses could manage to, you know, provide basic care to the women, stabilize the women, call the doctor and ensure that some of them lives were actually saved.
I mean, I'm pretty sure most of these complications must include a moment where it's a life and death situation. And if you don't have a trained professional, a life that could easily have been saved can't be. So apart from like these hinterland of, you know, Jharkhand and all these places, are there instances of such stories here in tier one, tier two, three, tier two cities as well, where this initiative had a huge impact on, say, saving someone's life?
So we hear of these cases from, you know, most of these facilities that we have touched. Each facility will have a story of a case that has been handled by the team, which they had never thought they would. In fact, what used to earlier happen is that a lot of these private hospitals handled the normal or uncomplicated deliveries. And when it came to some kind of complication, they had a list of neonatal ICUs or ICUs or higher centers, and they would immediately refer the woman. And in India, unfortunately, 30% of the women die in transit from one facility to the other when they are referred at the time of emergency. And so after this Manita program, we have seen that this referral outs have decreased a lot. So these hospitals are confident to handle those complications in their own hospitals and otherwise, you know, refer women on time before they get into a complication. And that itself will have saved so many women.
So we are taking care of not just the technical complications at that time, but also the logistical issues that lead to these fatalities.
So we've touched about 2.5 million women already. And we would have trained upwards of 15,000 health workers across various schemes. And our hope is that by 2022, we should be able to touch 5 million women.
Wow.
And once we have a program that is stable and starts to sort of sustain, it will be a kind of a doubling effect. So, you know, by 2030, when the world tries to achieve sustainable development goals, we should be able to get the India's maternal mortality down to 70 from the current 122.
Mm-hmm. Pompey, thank you so much for coming on to the show. I would just like to end this recording with one last question. And I'm going to ask you, what are the steps that Manyata is taking right now to evolve itself during this pandemic to make sure that the maternity care training continues uninterrupted?
So Manyata has gone digital during the pandemic, and the pandemic kind of forced us to precipitate some of the solutions that we were anyway planning to invest in. But we have fast-tracked all of that solution. So all of the training skilling happens in a digital mode through virtual platforms. And a lot of the simulations, et cetera, where we felt that that always required in-person trainings have also started to happen by way of some the latest technology that has been evolving in the West. So all kinds of virtual reality, augmented reality simulation labs are right now being used to train these healthcare workers who get a real hands-on sort of experience. And besides this, we are trying to ensure that the program itself sustains by sort of giving it seed funding for these enterprises to run their programs in a more sustainable manner as businesses. So a very nice strong business model is evolving around all this training of Manyata as well as the accreditation itself. So the accreditation moved on to a virtual platform in the middle of the pandemic, which even Government of India was pretty surprised and pleasantly surprised to see, where teams of doctors were able to evaluate another facility using virtual platforms by some demonstration videos, etc. And I think what just bringing all of these doctors and Foxy into the picture has been like the game changer in the program, so to say, where the doctors are involved, and it's not just theoretical trainers. So when practicing doctors are involved in a program, it is more real and it is hands-on experience and very current, and that's kind of enhanced the value of Manyata manifold, and folks are wanting to join, and there is a lot of demand for Manyata. So given that there is a very good demand and some very streamlined delivery processes, it's about really working with the ecosystem to ensure that folks are able to deliver on this quality, and that government recognizes the quality accreditation as well as people are able to demand for it. So women should know what good quality care is, what is not good quality, and they should actively seek good quality care.
If you'd like to know more about the Manyata initiative or would like to donate to their cause, please visit manyataformothers.org. You'll find the link in the episode description. Thanks for listening in, and please subscribe to the show to catch the next episode. You can follow us on Instagram to stay in touch and get all the updates. Our Instagram handle is vision.nari. That's vision.nari. If you know a visionary that I should feature on this podcast, write to me at thevisionarypodcast@gmail.com. That's thevisionarypodcast@gmail.com. This podcast is produced by Launchora, a storytelling and creative learning platform. Theme music is created by Diala Swain. She's a uniquely talented music producer from New Zealand. Do check out her music on SoundCloud or follow the link in the description. I'll see you guys soon with a new visionary. Have a great day.